Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting. I'm Judy Davis, and I'm here with my co-host and partner in crime, Sandy Fowler. I am really excited to dive into today's topic because I don't know about you, but I'm a tired mama. And as parents, we often see those memes or we hear parenting described as the toughest job you'll ever love. But what I find to be equally true is that it is also the most exhausting job you will ever love. And I don't know about you, but when my kids were little, I thought it'd get better when they got older. And while I don't need to change diapers or feed them or follow their every move to make sure they don't get into something, in many ways, the tween, teen, and college years are just as exhausting. And maybe I do kind of keep track of them like I did when they were little. I don't know.
I think sometimes you do, Judy, but even aside from that, I think you're right. I think there are just special forms of exhaustion for every age and stage. And it's not just the sleep deprivation, but I think it's the emotional weariness that gets to us. And I think that's something that every parent deals with today. And it's why I was so interested in talking to today's guest, because she knows all about this. She regularly in her practice works with parents. Her name is Erin Leyba, and she is an individual and marriage counselor who shares her wisdom through her blog, speaking at events, and of course, the way that I found her, which is through her book, which I love. It's called Joy Fixes for Weary Parents, 101 Quick Research-Based Ideas for Overcoming Stress and Building a Life You Love. So Erin, thank you so much for taking time to join us here today on Mighty Parenting.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So Erin, you know, you hear Judy and I talking about this, right? Parents have this problem that you address in your book, this, you know, we're just being worn out. And besides being unpleasant, because nobody likes tired or worn out, it also is going to hurt parenting, and it's going to affect our kids. So I'm curious, with, you know, all the different people you work with and all of the research you've looked at, what are some of the real reasons that parents are so tired these days?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the reasons is that they're just juggling so much, that they just have so much going on at any given point, whether they're working or taking their kids, you know, to appointments or sports games. Trying to manage the household, you know, buying groceries, cooking healthy meals, and everything that's on their plate. And I think it's a little different now in modern day parenting because people don't have that village they used to have, that a lot of people are doing this in isolation or having to hire people, you know, to babysit. Or I know, you know, for teenagers, it's just they're managing it all themselves. They don't have that extended network to help out.
That is so true. We've talked about that here in the Mighty Parenting community, that concept of a village and actually how to build one. But that busyness too is a problem. And yet I don't feel like the advice that you share with us as I, you know, look through your book, as I use things in there, I don't feel like you're telling us to do something else. You know, a lot of times they go, oh, you need to relieve your stress or you need to be less busy, but you have to do a bunch of stuff in order to do that.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's little subtle things about the way you look at your life or the way you relate to your kids or kind of the way you set priorities for your own days or your own weeks that can really create a fundamental shift in, you know, how you see family life and move that kind of overwhelm or that feeling of exhaustion into one of more joy and lightheartedness and kind of appreciation for your life.
Well, you know, Erin, you talk about the weariness of parents, and I kind of want to dig into that a little bit because I know that I often hear myself or other parents say the words, I'm done. In fact, a couple days ago, I think I looked at Sandy and said, I'm done. I was ready to walk away from everything that we're doing. And
yeah, you scared me.
No sooner had I uttered those words and wiped away the tears did I realize that those two simple words, I'm done, didn't really mean that, but it was actually a way for me to like put out to the world that I was tired of the stress and I needed a break. And so I would love for you kind of to dig in, Erin, and tell us, when parents are tired and weary, what does that look like in our lives? So if we're out here and want to kind of self-identify with, are we weary? Am I tired? Am I stressed? What would that look like as a parent?
Yeah. And I love that phrase, I'm done, because it's just, I mean, it's so telling of how we feel sometimes, that we're just trying to give and give and give. And then it feels like, it's like that saying, you can't pour from an empty cup. You're just exhausted, like trying to, you know, make everything work for everyone in your family and not really, you know, creating a balanced life or a life that you feel gives you, you know, where you can see the bright spots and the happiness in it. I think that weariness, you can notice that by just really subtle things like growing apart in your relationships. I think a big part of being tired and weary is feeling disconnected from, you know, the people that you really love. One way is, you know, to combat that would be to really be very intentional about your relationships, how you show up in your relationships, how you feed them with creativity or connection or fun. Things like going on a date night, if you have a partner, going on a date night at least once a month, or getting together with your best friends, you know, every weekend for Saturday breakfast or a run in the park or, you know, whatever it is. And then also connecting with your kids, like maybe once a quarter, once a month, taking them out for some one-on-one time and just getting that awesome connection with them. Like yesterday I was talking to a group of parents and one of them told me a story about how she sneaks in kind of special time with her son. And she was telling me that they went to McDonald's and they got French fries because that's his favorite thing in the world, McDonald's French fries. And then she had to go to the DMV to get her car emissions tested. And he just came with her and ate his French fries and they had, you know, a great conversation and he was happy. And she was happy that she, you know, she got that errand done. But she was kind of saying it gave her a lot of energy, you know, for other things during the week, all the other things like, you know, getting his food ready at night or taking him to sports games. And just having that special moment of connection really gave her tons more energy to deal with the other parts of parenting.
I love that whole being intentional in the relationship with your team and how you can do that and get energy from it to take away the weariness of parenting. That connection was something that I hadn't even thought about it, by being intentional in that relationship with your teen or young adult, that you actually will refill your battery. And so thank you for that. I really appreciate that.
And I think we often, go ahead.
No, I just say, I like that creativity concept. And not that it means that we have to be super creative, but that we can be creative within the span of what we have. Like, hey, I have to go to the DMV. Okay, well, I'm going to bring him with me. We'll get him his French fries and he can be there. And you turned an errand into a moment of connection. It took me back to when my youngest daughter was in high school. There was actually a period of time there where just the way that her activities fell, I would make dinner and I would actually plate up her dinner and take it with me in the car. And I would pick her up from one thing and drive her to another and she would eat her dinner. And then we'd just sit in the parking lot for a few minutes. But by doing that, by taking those few minutes and going, you know what? Okay, yes, I'm not going to pack her a sack dinner to take with her in the morning. I'm going to go and get her and haul her fanny from one place to the other and take those few minutes to connect with her. And it really did. Thinking back, I'm like, yeah, just having that little bit of time. And it was not just time. It was alone time with her, which can be difficult to do in a busy family as well. So I really liked that.
Yeah. So I think sometimes that having those moments of presence or magic, whether it's like taking your kid to a baseball game or something really simple, like taking them out for pancakes after they go to the dentist appointment or, you know, anything kind of those small things often of those moments of connection with kids. But I think another source of weariness is kind of when we get lost, lose connection from the things, you know, the person that we once were or the things that we once loved. And those things just get edged out by everyday life, like trying to make family life work. And we don't, you know, we feel guilty about taking the time to do the things that we really love, that kind of fill our cups and feed our spirits. And then when we lose those things, I think it's a lot harder to connect and really be present with our kids because we feel so exhausted.
I can see that so often. For those of our listeners and you, Erin, that don't know, I'm a military spouse, and I see that loss of self and pulling away from all of those connections happening so much in the military community, that extra stress and just trying to get through the day. So I really appreciate that. And so if somebody finds themselves in that space where they really have lost connection with themselves and find themselves pulling away from the relationships in the family or friends and things like that, what can someone do to kind of get back on track?
I think, again, it's starting small. Like, to remember, like, if you used to love going for bike rides, how to sneak in a bike ride, like, every Sunday morning, and kind of realizing if you get that 1 hour bike ride, even if you feel guilty about it because you're not making breakfast, but if you have that 1 hour to yourself where you can kind of feed your spirit, then you can come back and have a whole day of better connection because you've gotten that time. You've connected to something that you really love doing, whether it's, you know, something with spirituality or reading books that you like or listening to inspiring podcasts or, you know, like going golfing, whatever it is that kind of feeds you, and asking yourself that question in the morning, like, where is my joy going to come from today? And your joy might come from a self-care activity like getting your nails done or going for a power walk at lunch. But it might also come from, you know, those special moments of connection with your teenagers or your kids or your partner. Like, you know, I'm going to have lunch with my partner today, or I'm going to shoot hoops with my teenager after school, even if it's just for 10 minutes. And that's going to be part of my joy for today. Just really tuning into, you know, what's going to make you happy that day or that week. And if there's nothing scheduled, then trying to schedule in those small things like coffee with a best friend or things that are little treats for you, and realizing that those really fill you up to be able to give more to your family too.
I really have just fallen in love with that quote, where's my joy going to come from today? Because that's something I can wake up in the morning and I can think about that. I can be looking at my calendar and, you know, oh my goodness, you know, it's a busy day, or I have this or that, and stop and go, okay, great, but where's my joy going to come from today? And it could be, like you said, Erin, it could be my work. You know, Judy asked me the other day, we're working so crazy, and I was talking about the things I was doing and how long some things were taking, and she asked me, she said, do you like doing that? And I was like, yeah, this piece, this feeds me. I love the creativity in it. I love getting to play there. So taking that and finding that joy. I also love that you're reminding us that not only do we need me time, but before we take that me time, because it can be so hard to do, either just logistically, it can be very hard to get time away from all of your family and your obligations, but also mentally and guilt-wise, it can be very hard to do. So we need to look at that me time, if I understood you correctly, and make sure that we're taking some time that feeds our spirit, that helps connect us back with ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's great to notice that that's modeling for your kids, that, you know, leisure time, time with your friends, time that you know, love doing different hobbies, that's good to take that time. I feel like these days, you know, parenting can get so serious and kids are so stressed or pushed or anxious about different things. And it's like they're forgetting to take that leisure time too, that it's okay to just chill or just do something they love and not always be, you know, working on homework or practicing their sports and things like that, but they can just enjoy their lives. And that's a huge piece of life, is to learn how to just enjoy yourself too.
Yeah, it's interesting because when we talk about our kids, do what we do, not what we say kind of a thing, and just being able to model bringing the fun back, that is critical to kind of swinging the pendulum from this stress-filled environment that I feel like sometimes we have our kids on that constant merry-go-round. And by modeling the fun, we can actually give them a coping strategy that's healthy. And I love that. I really do.
Yeah. So another thing in your book, Erin, like I said, I saw so much in there, and I love the little pieces, because in our busy life, I can always take the time to read one of your quote unquote chapters, which is like a page and a half, maybe 2 pages, and really get something I can use. But one tip that really stood out to me, it was number 33, and it was acknowledge what you're doing right. And I see this in reverse all the time. Judy and I have addressed this in Real Talk. I think it was episode 5, where we were saying that, you know, we always compare our difficult moments, our, you know, peanut butter smeared on our shirt moments, and our stressful days with other people's highlight reels of when they look perfect and life is great. So we see that in reverse, where we don't measure up. So can you talk to us about doing it the right way? That idea of acknowledging what we're doing right.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of moments, where you can notice the positives in the day. That, I mean, I think it's kind of like a mental practice, like a muscle that you build when you're noticing what your kids are doing right, but also even harder to notice what you are doing right, because we're even harder on ourselves than our families. So it's, I think also it's realizing that, you know, a lot of times we compare ourselves to other people, and we might see the best parts of their life put forward, like whether it's on social media, Facebook, these perfect Instagram pictures, or, you know, people are vacationing in the south of France when we haven't really left our suburb, you know, in years or whatever.
Exactly.
You know, everything looks so perfect. And really like confronting that belief that everybody's better or better off than us. And I think it's really about compassion, like both kind of confronting the reality that we see put forward and remembering that everybody has their struggles and everybody has difficulties with things. But to know really what we're, you know, what our parenting gifts are, and to realize that those gifts are probably really helping our kids in the moments that they need that help, that we are really guiding them, and that we'll make mistakes, we'll mess up, and really being able to model that compassion for ourselves that we want our kids to learn. We want them to learn to be really kind to themselves if they mess up, or, you know, they have limitations or challenges in different areas, that kind of like we all do, but that we also have a lot of passion and gifts in other areas.
When we're looking at building that muscle, is there one or two specific ways that you do that? I know you touched on a lot of the different things, but like if I'm sitting here going, okay, I want to build my muscle, I know if I'm lifting weights, I pick up a 3-pound weight and do some arm lifts. To build that compassion muscle, is there a specific thing that we could do every day?
Yeah, I think a couple things. Like one is kind of focusing on the joyful moments of family life, those moments of connection, and really, you know, thanking our kids for specific things that they do, or kind of pausing to reflect on those moments of magic where, you know, we're all goofing off and on a car ride, or we're having a great time on vacation, or maybe it's just something like a homework experience goes well. And just remembering to pause on those moments of grace that we have with our kids, and remembering to just also remember what we're grateful for. Like, and I like the very practical strategies of like, you stopped at a red light in traffic, you remember something that you're grateful for, something going good with your family. Or every time you take a shower in the morning, you kind of review what's going well instead of just always getting anxious about what's not going well. Or at the end of the night, when, you know, when the last dish has been washed, that you remember to say thank you, or to kind of talk about something positive with your kids or with your partner. I think those are some neat strategies to kind of keep orienting us to the good side of life. And then the more we talk about it and pause on it, then the more momentum it kind of takes in our lives too.
Perfect. Perfect. And I'm going to make Sandy wrap us up here because we are almost out of time and kind of put it all together, unless you had another question, Sandy, but we're getting close.
So I will wrap it up in a second, but you know, I always have something else to say, Judy. So, but no, I really liked, Erin, your idea of connecting it kind of to a moment in our day. Something like you said, every time you hit a traffic light, think of something. Every time you finish the dishes, you know, talk out loud to your kid or your partner. Because a lot of times when we hear someone talking about, you know, focusing on gratitude or the happy moments, it'll be write it down, write it down. I do not walk around with a notebook with me. I don't like to write those kinds of things, you know, put a note in my phone. And it just doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't let me feel the gratitude when I'm sitting there writing something, but I can totally see doing those things. I can see thinking this every time I hit a stoplight, or, you know, every time I sweep the kitchen floor, or every time I get in my car, or every time I walk the dog, whatever that is. So thank you for that idea, for making it very simple, very practical, to kind of like building habits, you know, habit things you already have to do, attach your habit to that. So that was awesome. All right. So wrapping up, you know, in this 21st century of parenting, we are really busy parents and we don't have a village. So Erin's telling us these are things, two of the things that contribute to our weariness, to that, you know, feeling of saying I'm done. And we feel weary because of a couple of things. One is that we tend to feel disconnected from those we love. And we can change that by feeding our relationships, using a little creativity. And I know in your book, Erin, you have a section on that. We can also lose ourselves. So we can feel disconnected from those we love, and we can also get disconnected and lose ourselves. And so for that, we need to take a little me time, but make sure that it's me time that really feeds your spirit and connects you back to yourself. And one overarching thing that we can look at is saying, where is my joy coming from today? And if you start seeing a pattern where you're not seeing where the joy is coming from, definitely need to schedule that into our lives. And then this idea of acknowledging what we're doing right. Erin, you told us we need to build that mental muscle of first noticing what we're doing right, and then having some compassion with ourselves. And a couple practical tips were focusing on joyful moments of your family life and remembering what you're grateful for. And then, like we just talked about, you can tie it to little moments in your day. So Erin, for people who want to hear more from you, who want to find your book, where can they find you?
Yeah, the book Joy Fixes for Weary Parents. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and IndieBound. They could look there. And my website is www.erinleyba.com.
And they'll be able to find that on our mightyparentingpodcast.com website, all that information about where to meet you. And thank you so much for joining us today. And it is time to dig into Real Talk right after this quick message.
Parenting is the toughest job you'll ever love. It's a common phrase because it's so true. And as the teen years roll around and you start seeing changes in your child and you may start wondering, what's going on? Are they okay? Is this normal? And again, as they move out of the house, go out on their own, go off to college, you see more changes. And sometimes the changes are perfectly normal. And sometimes they're an indication that your child's in over their head, that there are things going on that they can't handle. And the parents' worry and their concern is, how do I know the difference? Well, now there's a book that can tell you. It's Warning Signs, and it is a parenting guide to help you understand about those changes and to help you figure out if your child could be at risk for depression, addiction, or suicide. The book will take you by the hand, walk you through that understanding, give you the confidence to be able to take the next step, to have a conversation or whatever it is that you need to do, and to give you some idea on some of the paths that you can follow. You can go to
dasium.net to the store in the shop there and get your own copy.
Welcome back to Real Chat with Judy and Sandy. We'll see if sparks are going to fly today because I don't know. I don't know if we even see eye to eye on some of the things I want to talk about today. But I was part of a conversation recently where a parent asked, hey, does anybody make their kids pay for car insurance? And so I wanted to kind of go to that place of discussing teenagers getting, not getting their license piece. I mean, yeah, okay, they get their license, but that idea of, okay, they got their license. Now what happens with the car? Mm-hmm. And Judy, you know, oddly enough, you and I have never, ever discussed as many parenting things as we talked about or bounced off of each other for ideas. We never discussed what we did with our cars and vehicles and things. So I'm kind of curious what your opinion is. Like, should a kid get a car for their 16th birthday? You know, what's their piece of this?
It's interesting because, you know, I hadn't really thought about it. And I know I was the oldest of five kids, all teenagers around the same time, within the same 7 years. So when it came time for me to get my license, I all of a sudden was like thrown into make my mom's life easier, right? And got to have the car as long as I took, you know, my brother here, my sister there, I could use the car to do this. So when my kids got to be 16, it was interesting because I'm a firm believer that it is not a parent's responsibility to give their kids a car. Mm-hmm. And I have reasons for that being that I think that sometimes a car gives them freedoms that give them situations that they may not be ready for. And so I think that there is this balancing act that has to take place. And I believe that if they want a car, they will figure out how to get it themselves, whether it be working or whatever. So I'm a firm believer that it is not a parent's responsibility to purchase a car for their kid. I know that I'm not in a majority or minority, you know, some people feel differently, but for our family and our situations, I didn't want to give my kids that much freedom. That sounds terrible, but I mean, it sounds very controlling. I don't mean it like that, but I feel like in our situation, the car was a way to start conversations and allow me to kind of explore situations and challenges they might be facing. You know, they want to use
in the car,
or like they want to use the car on Friday night to go to the football game and all of that. Well, great. Who's going to be in your car? Where are you going after the game? Where are you going before the game? It just gave me that way to know what was going on in their life. Does that make sense?
It does. And when they take your car in, you know, plans change, while they're supposed to always let you know if plans change, when it's your car, they know you're expecting your car back and you're expecting it at a certain time. So I think it does two things. One, it helps to kind of push them to stay on target. Two, it also gives them an out. You know, we'd had that talk before. We talked about the idea of giving our kids the safety phrase. It was in episode 4.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And we said, you know, with the texting, they're in a bad situation, get them out. Well, it's my mom's car. She'll know if somebody smokes in it. She will go crazy if I'm not home in time. You know, she needs it for work, whatever. It's again, gives them that little bit of an out. In listening to you talk, it was interesting because what you talked about with your family, you know, with being the oldest one and all of a sudden, you know, you could drive people. That's what I hear a lot from parents now, except that it wasn't, oh, you get to take mom's car. It was what I hear parents now doing is the kids are so busy and we are so busy that the solution is buy the kids a car. I don't have an opinion on whether that's a good or a bad solution. What I found worrying is that it doesn't sound like anybody's thinking it through.
Or it's an entitlement. Getting a car, I see this trend mm-hmm. in our teens that getting a car is an entitlement.
Yeah.
And it's because they're turning 16. It's not because of anything else. They're entitled to it because they can drive. And with a car comes a lot of responsibilities. And that's what I hear you saying. We're not taking into and thinking through the responsibilities and all that goes into having a car. So I want to, you know, kind of touch on that for a second.
Yeah.
What, as a parent, you know, you said, I don't think we're thinking it through. So I need you to dig in, because what are the things we should be thinking through?
So, you know, one of the things is, so if you're thinking about actually buying a car for your child, or also allowing your child to buy the mm-hmm. car, but, you know, number one is kind of what you talked about is, well, what's that going to do to our relationship? What's that going to do to our family life? Yes, we know it eases the stress and strain of having to drive them somewhere. It eases the stress of having to share a vehicle. That for me was huge stress. Mm-hmm. Just that constant jockeying of schedules of who needs a car to go here, who needs a car to go there. But that doesn't mean that giving them a car is the right solution. It can be for your family, mm-hmm. but just think it through. I think that's one thing we need to think through. Another thing you need to think through is your child, their readiness, their maturity, their ability to make decisions in difficult situations, their ability to stand up to peer pressure. All those things factor into them having their own vehicle. And I know it's, until you've actually been through it, I think it's hard to understand the difference between sharing a vehicle and them just having one of their own. Now, we never actually bought cars for our kids. However, through strange circumstances, we last summer did have four vehicles here. We actually own three because my husband doesn't like to drive his Mini Cooper in the winter. This is his baby that he's fixed up and been taken care of since they first came out in the States, but we're not going there. So in the winter, he garages that. So during the summer, we do have a third car that we used to, you know, we used to put that into storage during the summer and then switch. Well, we went, you know, four adults working out of the same household. We need the extra vehicles. Well, then we had the ability to use a family member's vehicle that we didn't realize they were not going to need. So they said, you know, hey, with the kids coming home for summer, we're not using this. If you guys would like to, feel free. So that's the first time we've had four of us and four vehicles. And there was a lot of what you said, Judy, there was a lot of losing touch. And there were definitely times with certainly my younger daughter where she was just gone so much more than she would have been if she'd had to ask me about mm-hmm. taking a car or taking my car. And so I think we did. We lost some connection. Now, it eased the stress. It eased the strain of scheduling. And I appreciated that. The other thing that it did actually help with on the plus side is we went, okay, this is your vehicle. You take care of the maintenance. You put the gas in it. If you're going to switch vehicles because, you know, the kid who's working right around the corner took the one that was 20 years old that you wouldn't drive across state, then you guys figure out how to deal with the gas. You know, fill up the car before you give it to them, give it back with a full tank. So they got that responsibility also mm-hmm. of owning a car. In the past, we've done different things. What we did with the kids in the summers is the only time they were employed during high school. But we made them figure out the mileage and then pay us for gas for going mm-hmm. to work, because we knew they had income to pay for it, and we didn't want to totally tap them out. And they were vehicles that we owned anyway, we're paying insurance on anyway and all that. But we looked at it and said, how can we make them take some responsibility for having the privilege of having a vehicle to drive?
Well, and I think you hit on a key thing. It doesn't matter if you choose to purchase your child a car or you decide that you'll let them use yours in different things. What I'm hearing you say is make sure that they understand it's a privilege, not a right. And with privileges come responsibilities, whether it's you have them pay for insurance or gas or maintenance, whatever it is that you choose in your family that works is great. I think back to when I was driving and I worked every weekend, and there were often parties that I would end up coming late to. And I remember this one Friday night, my mom had given me the car to go to work because I wanted to go to this thing. And I got to the party and three of my best friends had been drinking a lot. And when I got there, it was time for them to go. Mm-hmm. And so I got them in the car and decided I took all their keys and put them in my car to take them home. And then we would figure out how to get their cars in the morning, their parents' cars in the morning. Well, subsequently, on the way home, two of them puked all over the back of my car, my mother's car, which was then deemed the puke mobile from that moment forward, because in the summer, it smelled like puke no matter how much. So, but what was interesting about that lesson that it taught me, one, is that you never want to clean up puke in a car, but it was interesting because the fact that it was my mother's car gave me such a different outlook from that moment forward. I didn't realize that using someone else's property, that I could ruin it by no fault of my own.
Mm-hmm. You were trying to do the right thing.
I was trying
to do the right thing.
Exactly. And it was one of those moments that you look back and go, I wasn't prepared. And if I didn't have a car, I would have called my parent to come help me do this situation instead of trying to do it on my own. And those kids could have been in a lot of trouble.
Right.
You know, they were definitely had alcohol poisoning and all of that. And because I had a car, we were handling it ourselves instead of getting an adult involved. So that's like that flip side. And I think that's why that situation impacted me. And I think that led to my decisions for making sure that my kids didn't have a car in their high school years. And when my daughter got a car her freshman year of college to get to and from work and things like that, within a month of having it, because we got her the car. It was a used car that we got from someone and gave it to her, but she had to pay insurance and gas. And what she quickly realized was that the cost of a car was not just insurance and gas. Mm-hmm. It was the fact that it got her to be able to go to that one restaurant that she never went to before or run through the Starbucks line. The residual costs of having and being transportable increased her expenses tenfold. And she chose to sell the car and take the bus. So it's that whole responsibility thing teaches those lessons.
Right. Cars aren't good or bad.
Right.
Buying it, making them buy it, not good or bad. It's think it through, take your time, and watch out for entitlement. Watch out for, are they really ready? You know, we all have different kids. My kids didn't get their licenses. My one daughter got her license the day before she turned 18. One, you know, we said you have to get a license a year before you go away to college because, yes, she'd been driving since she was 16, but only on a permit. We're like, you needed to have her license. We needed to know. So sometimes you got to push, sometimes you got to pull back. But I think what I really wanted to say is just make conscious choices and know that you are not alone. You're not the only parent out there who's not going to buy your kid a car. And the kids learn. They learn lots of lessons. Ours learn quickly too, because we had the four cars last summer. Now it's winter. We're down to two. They come home for their crazy 6-week Christmas break. They don't have a car. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, there's a car right there. Couldn't we just, you know, use it? Yeah, if you want to pay the insurance and any maintenance that comes up, or, you know, if you get in an accident, you're covering the deductible.
Right.
You're like, yeah, no, I guess I really don't need to go that badly.
Exactly. And I would love to continue this conversation, but we've got to wrap up Real Talk. So if you're listening today and you want to join in on the conversation, you want to go to our Facebook group,
Yeah, go to mightyparenting.com, mightyparentingpodcast.com, because we keep adding things. So now you have the podcasts, we have Mighty Parenting TV, and when you're there, put in your email to the notifications, then you'll find out when the podcasts come out, which also lets you know when some of the Mighty Parenting TV comes out, and you'll find out other things that are happening. And until next week, be a mighty parent.
Have a good day.